the studios of KPCW in Park City, it's This Green Earth, a weekly talk show about the environment and our relationship with it. I'm Nell Larson.
And I'm Chris Cherniak. Thanks for tuning in.
I'm Carolyn Wara, sitting in front of Nell Larson this week.
And joining us is Walt Meyer. He's a senior research scientist at the National Snow and Ice Data Center out of Boulder, Colorado. Although, Walt, I have a sneaking suspicion you're not in Boulder right now.
That's correct. I'm actually in Florida, staying with my father for the holidays. So,
monitoring
from things from a little warmer place and trying to stay COVID safe.
Well done. But let's talk about Arctic sea ice. We like to have you on a couple times a year to talk about what's going on up in the Arctic with respect to sea ice. It's growth and its loss over the course of any given year. That's natural. And right now we are in a growth phase, let's call it. How are things going with respect to sea ice up in the Arctic?
Yeah, like you said, we're in the growth phase. We were lagging behind quite a bit, which is not too surprising. It was a slow freeze up because over the summer we had such low ice cover and the oceans absorb the solar energy, the energy from the sun, and warm up the oceans. And it takes time for that heat to dissipate. So during October, November, we were at record low, really the farthest below average that we've ever been in our satellite record for a given day. But we have now, the ocean finally cooled down, lost the heat, the ice has started growing. We're in kind of into the winter period where the entire Arctic Ocean is covered and it's spreading out into the Bering Sea. It's still low. It's still one of our lower extents at this time of year as we reach the end of the year. But it's not the lowest like it was for parts of October and November.
How long have records been kept?
Well, we have our satellite record, what we call our modern satellite record, which starts in late 1978, November of 1978. And that's our gold standard. We have continuous and it's consistent and complete coverage of the Arctic. So we're very confident in the trends we get from that. And we can compare different years quite directly and quantitatively and really assess, the trends and changes from year to year. We do have some earlier satellite data going actually all the way back into the 1960s, the mid-1960s, and that gives us some context. It's not as complete or continuous, so it's a little harder to compare directly, but we can at least make some general conclusions from that. And then there are various records from before that, from ships, like whaling ships, aircraft, that go really actually in some places back to even the 1800s. And that's kind of our observational record other than, scattered expeditions that went up into the Arctic in like the 1700s even. Really about 1950 is about where we can really start kind of look at more of the long-term trends with some confidence. And then 1979, our first full year with the satellites, where we have very complete, very thorough data. We do have some what we call paleo records, which is from paleographic data, which is things like ice cores or sediment cores that can give us some information about ice conditions many hundreds and even thousands of years ago. Again, we're kind of inferring things a little bit there. They're proxy records. The sediments under ice are different than the sediments where there's not ice, for example. And so we have some, definitely some long-term records that we can kind of compare to. And then the most recent sort of really quantitative hard numbers. And the thing that's very evident in these records is, we have a clear downward trend in our modern satellite record. And it's beyond anything, even though our records are incomplete, it's beyond anything we've seen in several thousand years, at least.
So these trends are not necessarily year over year, but decade over decade, let's say, you're seeing a consistent loss of ice?
Right. Yeah, there's variation from year to year. We don't set a record low every year. And in fact, our current record low and our modern record was in 2012, in September 12, 2012. And this year we were second lowest since then. But we definitely see a clearer downward trend when you look at we now have 42 years of data, which is a pretty good climate record in terms of looking at trends. And we can see a very clear downward trend. Particularly in the summertime, the end of summer in September, where we're losing about 13% per decade.
Oh, wow. 13%, that's a pretty impressive number. And we're also losing ice, not just in extent, but in its thickness, too. Talk about that.
Right. That's a very important part of the equation. Something we haven't had as good of information on. We don't have as long of records on. We have some submarine data going back as far as the 1950s, although really kind of starting in the 1970s. We can track the age of the ice as the ice moves around. The ice will melt during summer, regrow during winter if it doesn't melt away completely. And so as the ice survives the summer and regrows during the winter, it gets thicker year after year, at least up to a certain point, like after about 5 years. And so ice that's at least 5 years old is quite a bit thicker, about twice as thick as ice that's only grown since the previous summer. And what we've seen is that older ice has virtually disappeared. Now ice either melts completely during the summer or there's a part of it that might stick around for 2 or 3 years before it will either melt out or drift across the Arctic and out of the Arctic into the Atlantic Ocean and melts. So the ice is much younger than it used to be, and that means it's much thinner. And we've confirmed that with data that we now have from satellites. We have what we're called altimeters that measure the elevation of the ice from which we can derive the thickness. And that is confirming, even though those records aren't as complete or as long, they're confirming that we're seeing a much decreased volume and thickness of ice.
So we're kind of in a ice regrowth stage right now. The ice is growing again. Do we see it growing more in thickness or in size? How do you track that? Like we've grown by X percentage. How is that measured?
Yeah, well, I mean, we are in the growth stage seasonally, and it thickens. You grow extent, and then that will thicken as it grows, as you form ice. And then the ice that's already there continues to get thicker. As the ice thickens, it becomes kind of self-insulating, so the growth slows down over time. And so the ice grows very quickly at first, up to maybe a foot and a half or so, and then it starts slowing down. And particularly if it snows, the snow cover acts like a blanket and prevents the exchange of heat, and so the ice grows slower. But typically, ice that forms in September or October after the minimum, you will get, if it grows throughout the winter till March or April, it can get to about 2 meters or about 6.5 feet thick. Ice that's been around for a while will generally be about 3 to 4 meters, so about 10 to 12 feet thick, 10 to 13 feet thick. And it can thin during the it does thin during the summer and then re-thicken during the winter, and it just depends kind of on the thickness of the ice initially and how much melting it gets during the summer is the change, but we do see the things thicken up. The volume of the ice, the total volume, roughly doubles or a little bit more during the winter time compared to the end of summer.
We're speaking with Walt Meyer. He's a senior research scientist with the National Snow and Ice Data Center out of Boulder, Colorado, and we're talking about Arctic sea ice. Walt, you mentioned that the minimum of sea ice extent usually occurs somewhere literally around September 12th, 13th, 14th, down to the day you have it. When does its maximum typically occur?
So its maximum typically occurs in March. And there's variation both in when the minimum occurs and when the maximum occurs, more so in the maximum. And the variation is simply due to the weather. If you've got a storm in one place and it's keeping the ice from melting or it's accelerating the melt, at a certain time, it can extend the melt season or extend the growth season, particularly during the winter, because in the winter, everything is growing and you're growing out, and at the outward edge, everything's thin, and it's very, it's easily pushed around by winds and currents. It doesn't take much to melt ice or to grow ice. Everything's right around the freezing point. So it varies. We've seen it in as early as last week of February and as late as the first day or two of April, but typically it's around the middle of March. So it's roughly a 6 month growth period and a 6 month melt period.
Okay, we know that obviously, the atmosphere is getting warmer and that influences melting conditions, but the ocean is getting warmer too. That influences melt and growth. Which one do you think has a bigger impact on sea ice extent? Is it water temperature or air temperature?
Yeah, that's a good question, and it kind of depends on where you're at and what the conditions are. Water is much more effective at melting. The heat transfer and the heat content in water is much bigger than in the air. So, it's like you put an ice cube in 75 degree water, it's going to melt very quickly compared to an ice cube sitting in, sitting out on a plate in 72 degree air. So the ocean is much more effective, has much more heat to it. But the thing is, there's been less contact with warm ocean waters. We do get some from the Pacific, and those have been increasing. And that's certainly one of the things that's contributing to the ice loss. But in the Atlantic side, it's interesting because you've got warm Atlantic water. This is the Gulf Stream that flows up along the east coast of the United States and crosses over towards Europe. And those waters are quite warm, but they're very salty and dense. Mm. And what happens, they head up to the Arctic, and they're still warm, but they're heavy because it's saltier than the Arctic water, which is fresher, has less salt in it. And what happens is that it sinks down, and you actually get a layer. There's a layer of water in the Arctic Ocean that is actually above freezing, just a little bit, maybe a degree above freezing. But what the issue is that it's separated from the ice cover and the surface by what we call a halo cline, which is a salinity gradient, which is essentially a density gradient. That water, even though it's warm, generally warmer water is lighter, mm-hmm. And would float to the surface. But because it's saltier, it sits down below. And so that heat is kind of trapped down there. But what we're seeing is as the surface layers are warming up and the ice conditions are changing, that gradient seems to be lessening, and there's some concern that ocean water is going to there's actually some evidence that it already is getting closer to the surface, and there's concern that it could get to the point where it can really lose a lot of heat. And like I said, it's only about a degree above freezing, but as I mentioned earlier, water has a lot of heat in it, and even a degree above freezing can melt potentially quite a bit of ice. So if that continues, and if we get that warm water, we could really see a lot of ice go relatively quickly in terms of melt. And it also can kind of keep things at least thinner through the winter, so the atmosphere and the warm summer temperatures melt the ice more frequently, more quickly during the summer.
All right, last few minutes. I always like to ask you this one. This is going back to summertime and minimum conditions. How close did open water get to the North Pole this summer? Because you say this was the second lowest extent on record after 2012, correct?
Right.
And
yeah.
So how close did open water to the, when will I be able to sail to the North Pole in the summer?
Yeah, very interesting question. We look at the ice and we look at what we call extent, which is the area covered by at least 15%. Mm. And that on the Atlantic side got quite far north. It got to about, about 87 degrees north, which is within a couple hundred miles or so of the North Pole. But I guess that's a minimum of 15%. So there are, that means there could still be open water areas within that. And indeed, we actually did see that relatively low concentration. And in fact, there was a ship as part of an expedition called Mosaic, which was they froze a ship into the Arctic. I may have talked about this in my last time I was on, but just briefly, they froze the ship and it drifted across the Arctic Sea last winter, and it came out earlier than they expected. They still had research they wanted to do. They still had time. So what they did is they sailed back in. This was in August, and they actually went to the North Pole. And they went through, it's an icebreaker, so they don't have to worry about ice, but they actually made it very quickly and pretty easily. There was open water. There was a lot. There was ice there,
right.
But it was somewhat lower concentration. It was broken up floes, and they cruised to the North Pole very easily.
Wow.
So that's completely different than what we used to see. It used to be, you'd need like a Russian nuclear icebreaker to go through 12, 15 feet of ice, and they were able to go through really without any problem. Within a couple of days, almost as if they were sailing in the open ocean. Not quite, but quite easily.
Wow.
Is Carnival Cruise Lines listening? They're probably planning their first trip in 2030 or something, cruise to the North Pole and see the midnight sun, et cetera.
Yeah. They did do some cruises through the Northwest Passage a few years ago when they had open conditions, but that's still kind of risky. But we're getting to the point where, it could be kind of routine, maybe.
Wow.
That's the trend that you're seeing going back. Again, 13% on average loss of ice decade over decade over the past, roughly the past four decades.
Yeah.
And there's no sign, let's say, of that trend changing, let's say, for this next decade.
Yeah, not really. I mean, if you look at just the last like 10 years or so, it's been somewhat flat, but that's a pretty short time. But we look at our trend line over the 40 years, it's not lessening at all. We're not seeing any kind of recovery. We're seeing maybe a little bit of a break, maybe there's this thicker ice that's still there that it's harder to melt away completely. It's farther north. But as temperatures continue to warm, eventually that is going to melt away as well. So we don't see any turnaround in things.
All right, we'll leave it at that. Walt Meyer, Senior Research Scientist with the National Snow and Ice Data Center. Walt, as always, thanks for joining us, and we'll touch base with you sometime around the end of March when you can give us an update on how the ice did on its maximum extent.
All right, great. I'd be happy to.
Thank you, Walt. We hope you enjoyed this episode of This Green Earth.
And if you did, we hope you'll take a minute to rate us, share us, and leave a comment.
You can email us your thoughts and ideas for future shows at thisgreenearth@kpcw.org.
Join us next week on This Green Earth.